Ah, the cape. Cape. That's something you wear. It's short for Cape Cod. And Cape Cod houses were actually, you know, from Cape Cod, the place, you know, the elbow. But they really were derived from settlers in this, you know, 16th, 17th century. They came over from England. They were used to seeing little symmetrical, half-timbered structures with a little door in the middle with a gigantic chimney on the inside. And like most ancient colonial architecture, the shape and size of the house had to do with one simple fact. It was freaking cold in the winter. During the mini ice age, which happened during that whole time, you know, winters were 10, 20 degrees colder than they are now, and probably 40 degrees colder than they will be. And so the center chimney of these things had to radiate enough heat that each individual space that surrounded it could be heated with very little firewood, later coal. So the home is basically four or two rooms, depending on how big it is, at surrounding a center fireplace mass. And if you're entering the center of the house, just like with a garrison colonial, and you, if there's a second floor, there's a little stair somewhere in there, and to the right is one living space, the left is another. If it's a bigger one, the kitchen would be to the back. And it was all done based on one simple fact, that you had to provide heat everywhere evenly, and you had to be able to get in there really quickly. Well, what ends up happening is that straitjacket of a cape for the vast majority of American families now has meant that the cape built in the mid-20th century on gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It's almost like the acorn seed of the original cape house then spawns more and more wings off the back, called an L, or off the side. As we're standing right here in Guilford, Connecticut, we are entering a breezeway, and I'm entering it with Bruce, the main man, but also with Lee Whiteman, real estate guru from Guilford, Connecticut. Now, Lee, as we're walking into this thing, could you tell me what are the things that sell capes, and what are the things that maybe make capes kind of hard to sell?
They are romantic. People look at the front of a cape and they have a very good feel about it. It feels like home. So that is something that happens when people drive up to a cape. There's great curb appeal usually because they're pretty. They're like nice to look at.
They're like the house that your kid draws.
Yes, exactly. And then one of the dilemmas is that oftentimes capes were built with a couple of bedrooms on the first floor and a couple of bedrooms on the second floor. And unless they've had a shed dormer put on the back to give more space upstairs, it's not a big second floor. And one of the dilemmas for families that want to all sleep on the same level, they've got to make a decision. So, but that's one of the things. This house where we are today does have a very large shed dormer, so the bedrooms are all upstairs.
You know, what's really funny about capes in history was that they would duplicate themselves horizontally and, you know, become basically colonial, center hall colonials, and they would often extend to the back and make a swooping roof, and then they become salt boxes. So they would, this little acorn would has been growing for centuries in different ways, and we're going to enter through the active entry, which of course is the side entry, because let's face it, the vast majority of front doors in most capes are basically paneling now. They're not really used as front doors. So we're walking right into the kitchen, as you'd expect. And as with most things in a cape, this is a very human-sized kitchen. It's very small by American standards today. But for a lot of people, you know, small is getting back to be fashionable. When you have to heat all that cubage, you know, the idea of these giant bloat burgers, it's kind of neat to actually know that, you know, throughout a few hundred years, that personally sized space has really become a thing that has become revalued, I would think, right, Lee?
Yes, yeah.
So this house has been added onto to the side with a breezeway and a garage. And we're going to enter the freed cape, which means that there's no kitchen in the cape, which allows its small shape to have, you know, several distinct, wonderful spaces, which I think was a nominal dining room, which is quite undersized, has now become an office. What would have probably been the kitchen has now become the dining room. And Lee, we're going through these corner cabinets are really typical, right?
These are actually an add-on. This is a plus to a house like this. I think one of the advantages of a cape is that they can accommodate a lot of people. I grew up, there are five kids in my family, and we lived in a 1,200-square-foot cape because there's a lot, you're able to squeeze in a lot of spaces. What this house has is good windows to the back, but one of the dilemmas with capes is sometimes they can read dark. When you have the front roof line that comes down with an overhang, an eave, it can keep light from the front windows, and that's something to pay attention to.
You know, with capes, there really is a battle, and the battle is between what you just said is the incredible sort of emotional quality of having a cute little cottage. You know, cape equals cottage to me, and the fact that most of us like light and space. So what often happens is that 21st century developers, they make a cape, instead of having, as we have here, you know, ceilings that are about 7'6", I can actually touch it with my 5'10" frame, I can touch it with my fingertips, you have, you know, full 8-foot or 9-foot, sometimes even 10-foot ceilings in quote-unquote capes. But the cape is like, you know, it's like the American body mass. It's inflated in these last, say, 20 years, where we're now making capes that are kind of pumped up in shape. And my sense is that modern capes, not capes like this that was built, when was this built, Lee?
1950.
Yeah, 1950. You know, post-1980 capes tend to get, you know, a little bit wide around the middle, and they lose a lot of their charm. They lose a lot of their human-scale tightness. But people have to live. And so there's a book, you know, everybody should buy a book called Little House, Big House, Back House, Barn. Or Big House, Little House, Back House, Barn. It is a book that chronicles how capes, federals, and other colonial architecture from the 17th century added on to respond to need. And this house has added on in response to need for a kitchen and garage. Others add an L to the back of the house, typically to respond to family room needs that were unmet. And often that ubiquitous shed dormer is done. And speaking as an architect, the real problem with shed dormers is how high is the peak where you're starting? Because if that peak is too low, that roof becomes so shallow that it inevitably makes for tiny dark rooms on the second floor and very tight ceiling spaces. So one thing you might want to think about is the shed dormer is the normal solution, but think maybe about a gable dormer where the peak can actually be higher than the parent building and you can actually have more space in the back, but it will not overwhelm that charming front of the house. Maybe we can take a look in here and see. Ah, there it is, the center fireplace. There you go.
Yep.
And this living room goes all the way front to back. It's actually a surprisingly large living room for a little cape. It's very beautiful.
And they've done a nice job here in having a large window on the south side. So that does bring a lot of light in to this space.
And you know what I find interesting is that when the ceilings get lower and the rooms get tighter, and that's, again, all because of, well, cost, first of all, now, but back then it was heating, is that the millwork that you see in these houses becomes something that you appreciate more because it's closer and tighter and your focus is tighter. And here there's the classic 1950s knotty pine millwork everywhere, and it feels right, as do the built-ins. They're made out of the same cloth. So when you're thinking about renovating these houses, you know, go with the small windows to the facing the street because it will not lose its charm if you really blow them out. But feel free to blow out stuff in the back, but also feel free to enrich it with lots of millwork and interesting features that allow you to have close-up focus. Lee, any last thoughts on capes before we fly away?
They're charming homes. They are worth looking at, and because they do offer a lot of flexibility in terms of upstairs, downstairs, in a tight package that is accessible. They tend to be taxed a little lower because the upstairs is not a full story. Oftentimes you have a full story's worth of use, but the way the assessor looks at it, it is taxed at half or three quarters. So that's just a small advantage, but something to pay attention to.
And one last deal is that when you have a house with this almost cubic volume, it's almost like a little cube, it is as efficient as you can. That's what goes back to what Lee said about its high density of use. It also lays lightly on the land, and it allows for large trees to happen. It allows for more natural features to happen without the house overwhelming them visually or just in its footprint. So think about the cape, guys. It may be something that has left your mind, but it's back.
Duo Dickinson is an architect, designer of the Barn of Fun, and a contributing writer in home design for Money Magazine. And Lee Whiteman is a realtor in Guilford, Connecticut.